we're going to get started. Before I dive in, any questions about homework two? No. Okay. So I said last time that Michael Littman was supposed to come to show you a demo. He thought it was like this coming Monday. I thought it was the past Monday. So anyway, he might show up today. So just so you know, we're going to interrupt our slides and we're going to let him, you know, show us his robot dog, I think he is. But, okay, so I'm going to dive in. So last time we talked a little bit about recursion. We talked about how we can find this link between a very basic bits, very basic logic gates, Boolean algebra, and high complexity languages like Scratch or the software that you're using. What's here in the middle? And we're trying to find a link between these two things. And this is not working. And so we saw that, for example, with the Christmas lights architecture, we have the inputs coming in. We have A, B, and C. We have some kind of circuit. We have some kind of circuit here that updates the values. So, you know, we write stuff like mu A is not B and not C. All that logic is encoded in here on in this part. And so the values of A, B, and C go through this logic and become the new A, the new B, and the new C. And these lights go into some kind of light output circuit, which links these variables to the lights that we have. So, you know, in the program that you saw, the software, there's 8 lights, and we can tell them, I want you to be, you know, I want this light to be not A. So then there's going to be a not here, and A is going to go to a not, and it's going to turn on that light, and so on. Okay, so we have these 8 Christmas lights, and we can use this circuit and use this circuit to make cute patterns. And so this is very similar to a very simple computer. Okay, so, oh, and also, so the lights go through this, the state variables go through this output circuit, and they also go back, are fed back into the input with 1 second of delay. And so the new values become the old values on the next second. And we've seen this when we made the tables. And so this is very similar to a computer. Computers is the architecture is similar in that you have input devices, you have the keyboard, you have a mouse, you have a microphone, you know, any way you can bring bits into your computer. You have some kind of memory. This is not very popular anymore. CDs used to be, it used to be that you weren't able to write on CDs. Now you can. So you have the memory of a computer, you have all kinds of registers. And then the values, this is the state update, and then the values are copied back with a very small delay. And, you know, the frequency of your processor says how many times per second does this go on, and, you know, it can be anywhere, you know, 1 gigabyte is a billion times per second. And so the problem that we have now is, okay, well, say we made this, we decided that we wanted the lights to blink this way. And we've gone through this example, you know, two lights A and C are blinking the same way, and light B is blinking on the opposite second. And so we decided, you know, we made the truth table, and we decided that this was a program that would, you know, if we run this program, it would make the lights blink this way. So this is actually, so the state variable update box in this case will be this, because the new A is equal to B. You can see that up in the upper left corner. So A is going to be B, right? So whatever B is, that's going to get out as new A. New B is not B, so B goes through a not and becomes new B. And C mu c is going to be b, right? So a and b, a and c are basically not used. We just use b on the right-hand side of the equals in our program. Okay, so this is the circuit that we need to implement to have this kind of blinking behavior. And then we link the outputs to the inputs. And so I just wanted to show visually what happens. This is exactly the architecture from before, the second slide that I had. And this is how we update the values, and this is how the values go into the lights. And so what happens on the first second? On the first second, we want B to be on. And say it was false on the previous second, and it will be. It goes to a not. Electricity, so the false going to a not becomes a true, and that gets fed into the second light, and the second light will be on. And so what's going to happen on the next second? On the next second, the B is going to be copied back to the input, and so this is going to be true. And I'm going to show what's happening on the next second. So on the next second, again, B was true. It gets copied back to the input. And so this time, this true electricity is propagated through the circuit, and mu A will be true. It gets fed to the first light, and the first light becomes on. And also, what happens to B? Well, B is true here, but it goes through a NOT gate, and so it becomes false. So this light goes off, and after turns off, and C becomes, gets turned on because the electricity is going through here. Okay, is this clear? Okay, so this is going to continue on every second. That's going to happen. So say now we have we have this blinking light. We get bored of it. We want to change it to the traveling lights. And the traveling lights was a light where one light was on, A was on for 1 second, B was on for 1 second, C was on for 1 second, and A again, then B, and then C again. And again, we made a truth table, and we came up with this program here. Mu A was old C, mu B was old A, and mu C was old B. And so this program goes with this circuit. This program goes with this circuit. Okay, so if you want to change the behavior of the lights, we have to change the whole circuit. We have to make a separate circuit for each pattern that we want. So this is going to be the circuit. It looks a little easier. It's a circuit for the second program. Okay, so we want a way. For example, if the new A had the formula that you see up there, and we wanted to change that. So for that formula, we need to have two nots, four ands, and one OR gate, right? If you count all the ands and nots and ORs, you're going to see that this is how many gates you need. And if you want to change that, you need to rewire, change the ands and the nots, where they go, and it's really complicated. So you want a way to reprogram it, to program it, to make it easy to change. And so this is how we came up with a machine language, which is a kind of like a programming language, which with very simple instructions. It's complex enough to capture the important functions, and it's simple enough to be implementable in hardware. Okay, and we're going to continue after Michael. Thank you for being here. You can set up. And I'll go on for a little bit. So, again, this language is very simple, and we're going to see the important functions are, we talk about the basic functions, the ands and the nots and the ors, and this machine language will capture those things. And it's also, they're so simple, though, that they're very easy to implement in hardware. Okay, so... First, I want to talk about variables, and we've dealt with variables. We had this scratch script, and we wanted to make the cat draw a square that was the side of the square was a variable, and we set up this variable size, we set it to 100, and then this subroutine uses that variable, and depending on how much size is, draws a square of the size with a side of size pixels. So we use a variable here, and we can use something like this. We said, I think we had something similar to this too. We set counter to 0, so this is a variable again. We repeat until counter is equal to 10, and we meow and we increase the counter. Okay? So the variable is just a number that can change. We can change its value, and it has this flexibility to it. We also saw stuff like this. A, say these are all Boolean variables. A is x or y, friends, and z. Okay? And we can compute the value of A and the value according to the values of these variables. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop here because it's a point. And
I'm ready.
Oh, you need that? Okay.
Well, it's just to show people everything. Hi, everybody. My name is Michael Littman. I'm a professor in the computer science department. And as one of the people who helped create the course in the first place, but I can't teach it right now because I've been department chair, which is a lot less fun than getting to teach this class. But I hope everybody's having a good time and treating Monica nicely and all of that, because that matters to me. All right, so you guys have seen this before? Yes? This is Scratch, right? Okay, so Monica asked, I just got this cool new thing, and Monica wanted to see it and thought it would be really cool for you guys to see it as well. So so this is Scratch, and these are Legos. These are Legos now all over the floor. These are just Legos. But this particular set of Legos comes with a cool little device, which is a USB plug. So I can plug my Legos into the computer. And the latest version of Scratch is all set up to deal with these particular kinds of Legos. So this is what I'm going to show you. Okay, you see which menu we're at now, right? This is the motion menu. And what does this do? This controls the motion of the sprites, right? So, like, if we wanted the cat to do something like, I don't know, spin around, right? We can make a little script for that. Have you done this sort of thing already?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do this really fast then. So, let's see, when the cat is clicked, we'll call it a cat instead of sprite one, which is hard to remember. All right, when the cat is clicked, what are we going to do? We're going to repeat 10 times, motion, turn right. How many degrees do we have to turn if we want it to go all the way around in 10 steps? 36? That sounds right. So 15 is too small. So we'll do 36. All right, so now we click on the cat, and it spins all the way around. It's a little too fast, so I'm going to put in a tiny little bit of delay. And if we wanted it to meow or whatever, right, we can put all that in there as well. Let's see, is that better? That's fine. All right. So so motion in this case really just means changing the images on the screen, which isn't really motion. It's just apparent motion. But what if you have actual motors? So so what this set of Scratch Legos has is we made, my daughter Molly and I made a little Scratch cat, or actually it's kind of a dog. I don't know what it is. It could be a dragon. It's got eyes and weird ears and little feet and stuff. But its body is actually a motor. Coming out the back, the tail is actually an axle. And it's set up so it doesn't exactly wag back and forth. It rotates like a propeller. But, you know, I bet dogs would do that if they could do that. I know I would. And on here, where its mouth would be, there's a sensor. And it's actually an infrared sensor. This is the same kind of technology that runs remote controls for TVs. There's two little, you can verify for everybody. See the two little holes? She says there's two little holes. One of them is actually a light emitter, infrared light emitter, and the other one's an infrared light receiver. So one's like the remote control, and the other one's like the TV. So it's constantly looking for reflections of infrared light. So if you put your hand in front of it, your hand acts as kind of a mirror. It bounces the light back, and the sensor can detect that something's blocking it, and basically the distance. So this is all wired into the dog now. And what we're going to do is actually there's a Lego USB hub, if you can imagine such a thing. And without shattering it, I'm going to plug the USB in the wire, and we're going to watch, wrong menu. We're going to watch the motion menu and see what happens. Da-da-da. anything happen? We're going to say no. All right. What if we go to looks and then go back to motion? We're going to say no again. I stand corrected. Something changed. Do you see it now? In addition to the regular blue blocks, there's kind of darker blue blocks at the bottom. Right? And what do they say on them? Motor on for 1 second, motor on, motor off, motor power, motor direction. These are now blocks that are going to control not the motion on the screen, but the actual motion of the motor. So what we'll do now is we're going to throw in turn motor on for 1 second. We'll throw that into, actually, let's do it differently. We'll turn the motor on when the cat is clicked, and we're going to turn the motor off when the cat is unclicked. So now while the cat's rotating, the real motor's going to turn as well. Now some of you are going to have trouble seeing that. I'll hold it up as best I can. You'll have to take the word of the rest of us. The other thing I'm going to do is have it switch the motor direction. So at the end, it's going to put whatever direction the motor's been going, the next time it turns on, it'll go in the reverse direction. All right, so here we go. Here's our little friend, dragon-like thing. I'm going to click the cat on the screen, and it's going to flip, and this is going to turn at the same time. All right, and we'll do it again. And now turn the other way. Turn the other way, right? We've never met before, I swear. All right, so that's a way of sending output, not just to the screen, to the sprites on the screen, but actually to things in the real world. Now we're going to do the opposite. We're going to take sensor information as well. So how can we do that? So we go into the sensing menu. I think this is more or less how it always is. But this sensor value variable thing, it usually has slider and sound, all these things that you actually can't access. But now it also has tilt and distance as well. And that's referring specifically to these Lego WeDo pieces. That's what this is called, by the way. Does anybody know the other kind of Lego robots, what those are called? You know, there's also Lego robots that you can buy in the store, for example, Bridgewater. And if you wanted to ask for them by name, you would call them... No? You've really never seen these? A lot of middle schools have them. They're called Mindstorms. So Lego Mindstorms. So they're actually there's a Lego brick that is a computer, and you can wire it up to Lego motors and Lego sensors and so forth and make Lego robots that can actually roll around and do all sorts of things. And there's competitions all over the country where people play around with these things. They're nice because if you don't have the facilities to have like a complete manufacturing setup in your lab, you can have a living room and Lego bricks and you can make yourself a robot. So that's really fun. But this is simpler because instead of having a brick that is the computer that's doing all the calculating, I'm just using my computer and Scratch on the computer to do the calculating. It's just playing out kind of in the physical space. That's why they have to be wired together. Anyway, we can now turn on the distance sensor as a block in Scratch. Now I think Scratch does this. If I double click this block, a little speech bubble will appear. I don't know if you've tried this. If you want to know the value of a variable before you actually run it in the program, just double click it. And it should tell us what, it should say like 100 or 0, one of those things. Yeah, okay. So 100 means there's nothing blocking the sensor. But I need another hand. Can you be the distance person? Just hold the dog and put your hand partway in front of it, maybe like 3 inches in front of it. Okay, so now I'm going to click. You can watch on the screen. It should give a different number now. When we double click, oh, you're too close. Huh, interesting. It doesn't seem very precise. There we go. All right, so it's got 100. Like, 100 is basically infinity. And then it goes less than 100, less than 100, less, 0 when you get close to it. Here's a better way to do it. Here, move it again. I know. You didn't count on this when you sat in the front row. This is why nobody ever sits in the front row. So now that I'm department chair, I learned this really interesting thing. You know, so people that, well, you guys are pretty good, actually. A lot of times, people will sit in the back. Like, students will sit in the back, the professors in the front. When all the professors meet for faculty meetings, then, like, the chair stands in the front, and all the faculty members sit in the back, and they leave the front row empty. Now I know that when all the chairs meet and the dean stands in front, all the chairs sit in the back. And I imagine this keeps happening, you know, levels and levels and levels above. All right, so if we turn on... You didn't need to know that. I'm sorry. I just thought it was interesting. All right, so that's the tilt sensor. Hang on. I don't know how to do this with the screen set up the way it is. right. But what we're going to do now is we're going to add to the program, the script is actually going to use the sensor value from the physical space. Instead of just activating when the sprite is clicked, we're going to have it activate when we interact with the dog, the Lego dog. All right, so how do we do that? Well, we can change things around a little bit. We can make a little loop. Let's see, when cat is clicked, actually, all the time, when green flag is clicked, we're going to run a little forever loop. So it's just going to keep going around and around and around. And what it's going to do, it's going to test whether the distance sensor has a value that's, say, less than 50. And if it is, if it does have that, then what should we do? Then let's do whatever we did in this other loop. All right, so this script is a little bit hairier, but we should be able to read it. Let me point at the screen when we look at it. It's too low. All right, so let's break this down. So what this is saying is when we click the green flag to start Scratch going, it's going to just keep doing this loop over and over again. Each time it goes through the loop, it's going to do the following. It's going to read the distance sensor and see if anything's in front of it. If there is something in front of it, well, if there's not something in front of it, it just jumps to the end of that if, and then back to the top of the forever. So it's just going to keep testing it over and over and over again. Once it finally gets a value that's less than 50, it's going to turn the motor on, spin the cat, turn the motor off, reverse the direction, and then go back and test again. So basically, it's going to keep spinning the cat, running the motor, whenever anything's in the way of the distance sensor. So this gives us a way of actually clicking on something, in a sense, in the real world. So here's our robot-ish thing. We start it going. All right, now I'm going to pet the robot. Here we go. Good robot. Good robot. All right, it's wagging its happy propeller tail. It's spinning its doppelganger up on the screen. We can make it make little sound effects, little meowing. We could have it do all sorts of different things. But the fact that the point is that all the little blocks that you learn about in this kind of virtual scratch world can be connected to things in physical space: switches, sensors, temperature readings. The other thing that comes with the WeDo is actually a tilt sensor. So this is a tilt sensor. It looks like a Lego brick, but one last time, ready? Listen. Okay. So it's got little pieces inside that rattle. So when you tilt this brick, those pieces kind of slide around. They change what's being connected to, and the result is that it can be read off on the screen. So whether the brick is flat, tilted right, tilted left, tilted forward, tilted backwards, all those things can be read off. And so you can essentially make yourself a little Wii controller. That's what my daughter did. She made a little, like an Etch-a-Sketch controller, where you hold the brick, and then you tilt it, and then on the screen it starts to make a line in one direction. You tilt it the other way, it starts to make a line in the other direction. Tilt it forward, it makes a line down. So you can sort of draw with the Lego brick. People know Wii, right? I mean, things like that, right? Sort of controllers that you act that aren't just buttons. They're actually, in this case, gravity sensitive. So again, you could just build all sorts of things out of that. And the WeDo kit comes with some instructions, but I don't know. I guess as a computer scientist, I tend not to read the instructions. I just start to throw things together and see what happens. And this is sort of what happened, our little dragon friend. So other things that I should mention, or is that pretty much what you wanted me to talk about?
That's pretty good.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Very nice to meet you. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll give you back your screen. And thank you for your help. Oh, it's now. Did you notice what happened when I put the Legos in the box? The wall of the box is now close to the sensor. So now the cat's going completely wild over here. So, done. We're back.
Yeah, it takes a little while to figure it out, but yeah.
Ooh.
Almost.
That seems perfect.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Sure.
All right, so we were, at this point, we were talking about variables and how I'm trying to get you guys to understand the concept of a variable, and the variable is just a number that can that has a name, and its value can change. So it's not a fixed number. It's not like 100. 100 is just 100. It can't change. But a variable can be a number that can change. For example, the size here can be 100, or we can change it to a different number.
So let's do a few clicker questions. So these clicker questions are about the nag loop that we talked about last time, the repeat until loop. And we said that this loop is, the repeat until loop has a condition here. And it's going to execute whatever happens inside the loop until this condition is met. So we said that we summarized it to repeat until what I want to happen happens, and then you just execute the code inside. Okay? So any questions about this that you have, ask now. Or we're going to try to do the clicker question. Okay, so the question is, what does this script do? And the script is, when flag is clicked, set number to 20, and then repeat until number is bigger than 25. And what you repeat is, you play sound meow until done, and you wait 1 second, and you change the number by one. So what is this going to do? Option A, the cat meows 5 times. B, the cat meows 6 times. C, the cat will make no sound. D, the cat meows forever. E, the cat meows once.
Is that right? The second line, the number is greater than 25.
I'm sorry?
Is that right?
Repeat until number is greater than 25. Yeah, that's a bigger than. I know, it's kind of thin, right?
Answer is B. So, the cat meows 6 times and not 5 times because the number starts by being 20 and it stays in the loop until it's strictly bigger than 25, so not until it's bigger or equal than 25. So, you know, it's 20, it meows once when it agrees it to 21. When it's 21 and meows a second time, when it's 22 and meows a third time, when it's 23 the fourth time, 25 the fifth time, and 26 the sixth time, right? So the condition of staying in the loop here is number is bigger, strictly bigger than 25. So I'm going to do this until it's 26, basically. Okay? 25 is not good enough. Any questions? Next.
Can you explain again the repeat until number is greater than 25?
Sure. So I'm basically staying in this loop, the repeat until loop, until this condition is met. Okay?
Oh, until whatever the number is
strictly bigger than 25. So until it becomes 26, basically. In this case. Okay?
So this is what I want to happen. I want the number to be bigger than 25, and I just continue doing it while its def condition is false. So, yeah. Okay, any other questions?
All right, next question.
This is the same script, only I'm just going to read it. So what does the script do? When flag is clicked, set number to 20. Repeat until number is bigger, strictly bigger than 25. And inside the loop, place sound meow until done. And wait 1 second. And the options are A, the cat meows 5 times. B, the cat meows 6 times. C, the cat will make no sound. D, the cat meows forever. And E, the cat meows once. And I'm going to start it. I'm going to stop at 1. Okay. 3 more seconds. Why? Can somebody tell me why the script, the cow meows forever? Yeah, go ahead.
Because it doesn't, after it waits for a second, it doesn't have the number increased by 1.
Exactly.
So it's not going to increase the number at all, so the condition's never going to be better.
Exactly. So what she said was that in the loop, the number doesn't get, nothing gets added to the number, so it's never going to be able to reach 25. It's always going to stay 20. Okay.
Okay, last question. This one
is when flag is clicked, set number to 30. Repeat until number is strictly bigger than 25. Play sound meow until done. Wait 1 second. Change number by 1. And the options are the same. And I'm please don't use your computers. It's unfair to the rest of the class. If you're thinking, just in case you're tempted to do it. I'm not saying you did. There should be a scratch detector in the classroom, but yeah, that'd be nice. Well, on the exam, there's no computers allowed, so that's what I'm saying. All right, I'm going to stop at 1:10. Exactly. The number starts out 30. So it's not even, you know, my condition, what I want to happen already is happening. So I'm not going through the loop at all. Okay? Any questions? No? guess I'm, my feeling is that everybody, most people get the idea of a variable. So now we have this big Boolean expression that we want to solve. And because, so remember where we were was that we were trying to figure out a programming, very simple programming language that has very, very simple and basic instructions. And so we are going to try to break this up into very, very simple instructions. So when you see this, when you did this in homework one, so something like this, what do you want to do? What are you doing first? What is the operation that you do first?
Parentheses,
right? So let's, oh, we can, does it matter which one we start with?
Left to right.
Left to right? Sure. Yeah. I mean, we can start with this one, we can start with this one, it doesn't matter, okay? So let's start with the one on the left. So that's our first step. And that's the first operation we're gonna do. And we're gonna put our results in a variable, which we'll call x, for example. And here we're gonna remember what the variable contains. So in real life, there's going to be values for A, B, and C. So in real life, we're just going to say x equals false or x equals true or whatever it is that is the result of B and C. What is the next thing that we're going to do? The next one, so A and, so finish that for N, for example. We're going to name that Y, and we're going to remember that Y is A and X. So continuing, we can say this B and C is Z, or we can be smart and notice that we already have B and C and X and use that, but for now this is good enough. And so we're going to store the result of B and C in Z. And then the fourth step is going to be not A, which we're going to store in W. And we're going to do the second paren, store that in V. And then we're going to have, you know, the result of this parenthesis. So A will be the result of this parenthesis or the result of this parenthesis. And so Y or V is going to be A. Yeah.
Why does, because you have two B and C's, why do they not equal each other? Because in the first one, you have B and C, and the second one, you have B and C. Why is X equals B and C and Z equals?
Yeah, I know. You can. That's very inefficient, right? You could just use the same. You could use X.
Yeah, you could use the same variable.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that might not be always the case, so that's why I wanted to do it this way. But you can absolutely use, ignore step three and just use X. That's actually better. Okay. So here's what we're gonna work with. We're gonna have this very simple processor. We're going to have variables A, B, through P. And we're going to have this accumulator, which is a very special variable that is kind of involved in all our basic instructions. And there's also going to be a logic that's going to provide our basic operations, the ands, the nots, and the ors. So we're going to have ors, ands, and nots in here. And it turns out that we only need one or, one and, one not. And we can also have access to these variables. We can have A going in the accumulator, or we could have B going into the accumulator, or in any of these gates. So all these variables are accessible to us, and we can make use them in operations with the accumulator too. And here are all the operations that are allowed that we can do. So we can do accumulator equals accumulator or variable. And a variable can be any of these variables. So the variables that we have are A through P, and each has a code, and we're going to see how we can use that code. We can do accumulator equals accumulator and variable, accumulator equals variable, not variable, and all of these too. So we're going to have, the title is 7 bits, so each instruction will have 7 bits. And the way the 7 bits are going to be set up, the first 3 bits will give the nature of the operation, so what are we doing?
Are we doing accumulator equals variable? The first three bits are going to be 0, 1, 0. Are we doing variable equals accumulator is variable? The first three bits are going to be 1, 0, 1. Okay? And the last four bits are going to be the code of the variable that is involved in the operation. We're going to see a few examples in a little bit. And then, so this explains how the code is built. Again, the first three bits are the operations. This is like going into a little more detail. So let's say we have accumulator equals accumulator or variable. And we want to see what is the code for that instruction. So we need to choose our variable and say that variable is A. So we want to do accumulator or A. And so what we want to happen is that A would go into this OR together with the accumulator, and the result is stored back into the accumulator. This is very hard to see on this slide. But so because we only have these, what is the code for our operation? So again, the instruction is accumulator equals accumulator or A. What are we choosing here? Yeah.
Zero, zero, B.
Yeah. So this one, right? Exactly. And then we need the code for A. After that, 0000. Okay. So the accumulator equals accumulator or A. So this is red, whatever. You can't see. But anyway, this is the color of this is the first code, the first three bits. And then the code for A is 000. And that's how you build the instruction. If you have accumulator equals not D, what will it be? Zero, one, one. Okay. And 0011. Okay. Yeah. That's exactly it. Okay. So now, you know, if I give you any code, you can tell me exactly what the operation is. And if I give you an operation, you can tell me exactly what the code is.
For example, we're going to have the codes that we have to memorize.
No, you can. It's going to be open notes, so you can bring anything you want with you. Okay? Okay. Now, this is going a little further. You know, in real life, we don't have stuff with the accumulator. We have, you know, the expression that you've seen before. We have A equals, you know, parens, nots, ors. So let's try this one. How would we do this if we only have these operations available? We need to break it down into smaller steps, right? Okay. So the way this goes is, you know, you have, obviously, you still have accumulator, you have the logic, you have all the variables, but you're only going to use these for this operation. So, okay, we can't do a variable equals variable. You know, we can only do, you know, dump the variable, say A is true. We put it in the accumulator first, because we have accumulator equals variable here. So we can use this one. And we're going to say accumulator equals A as the first step. Then, so accumulator becomes true, and then we can copy the accumulator into a variable, which is this one, variable equals accumulator, right? And then what happens is that A is copied into B, okay, right? Okay. So we can, because we can only use these operations, we need to break anything we have into smaller steps until we reach one of these operations. And this is how you do A equals B. And another one is, well, this is a question, just to see if you guys got the codes. I'm assuming that not everybody has the slide printed out, right? Okay, well, never mind. All right, so this is another one. It's A equals B or C. How would we do this one? So we don't have, we have these two are going to help us, right? Because they have an OR in them. So we're definitely going to use this one or this one. Okay? And so, let's see. we can, first of all, we can put B in the accumulator because, okay, let's say we choose this one. We have accumulator equals accumulator or variable. So because we want to have B or C, we need one of them in the accumulator. So let's see how this is going to go. If we copy B in the accumulator, and then say accumulator equals accumulator or C, we have, now we have, at this point, we have B in the accumulator. So we can just say, or the accumulator with C, so C is one of the inputs of the OR, the accumulator is the other input, and it is B because we took care of that. We copied B into the accumulator, and the result is being stored back in the accumulator. What is gonna be in the accumulator after this step?
B or C.
B or C, right? Because it was B before, and now it's whatever was in the accumulator or with C. So that's going to be in the accumulator. And now what do we have to do? Is this enough? What do we want to get? We wanted A equals B or C. So we want the value of B or C in A.
Variable equals accumulator,
and the variable is A. So we do A. We copy whatever is in the accumulator in the variable A, and then the value will be B or C. Okay? Any questions? Yeah.
So you said that it was A because of the original equation.
That's what we want to do, yeah.
Okay.
And we want to solve that by only using the basic operations. Yeah.
So it like flips back into itself somehow? You use the equation to like solve itself?
No. I go from complicated to simple, if that makes any sense. Probably not. But anyway, this is the point. The point is these are very simple operations, and this is a more complicated operation. And I'm breaking this into simpler operations, which are these. But I have to figure out how to break it into those operations. Okay, so this is just to see if you guys got it. Okay, don't hate me. So the question is, what will A be after the following set of instructions? Accumulator equals not B. Accumulator equals accumulator and C. A equals accumulator. And the options are A equals not paren B and C, close paren. B, A equals not B. C, A equals not B and C. D, A equals not C and B. E, A equals B and C.
So do you click in steps?
Yeah. You just go step by step and figure out what A contains, what B contains, what C contains, and what the accumulator contains. It's really funny when I get like really blank stares from you guys, but then like there's the right answer is like 90%. It's really funny for me. You don't understand that, but it's really interesting. Because I really felt like you guys didn't get it, but it turns out. Okay. Maybe stop at one. I like to write on the board, but can everybody, well, I'll just write here. And also talk, so if you can't see. Okay. So, We have accumulator. And I'm going to make a box for the accumulator. And it says accumulator equals not B. So we have B, and we have C, and we have A,
which is,
this is not necessarily the order that they're in, but this is what we have. And so the first step is accumulator equals not B. So I just take whatever's in B and write not B in the accumulator. And these are going to be real values, but I don't know what they are right now. So I'm just going to work with B and C instead of trues and falses. Okay. So that's what happens after the first step. After the first step, there is not B in the accumulator. Then I do accumulator equals accumulator and C. So I'm going to put in the accumulator whatever was in the accumulator before ANDed with C. Okay? So this is going to become not B and C. Right? And this is not. And I should really erase this and rewrite it, but I'm just gonna do this for now. Okay, and then A becomes whatever's in the accumulator. What's in the accumulator now? Not B and C, and that gets dumped in A. So A will be not B and C. Okay? If you have stuff like, this is a little tricky, but if you have stuff like accumulator equals, I don't know, you have some kind of or in the accumulator, put parentheses around it. Because after, so the or, well, we'll get it. All right. I think there's another clicker question. So any more questions about this? Okay. Same question. What will A be after a following set of instructions? And this, the set of instruction is accumulator equals B, accumulator equals accumulator and C, D equals not accumulator, accumulator equals accumulator or B, A equals accumulator. And the options are A equals B or not paren B and C, B, A equals D or B and C, C, A equals not D or B and C, D, A equals B and C or paren D and not B, E, A equals B and C or not B. So just a quick hint. When you have something like an instruction like this, the right hand side is what gets dumped, and the left hand side is where it gets dumped in.
I was asking like how D really fits into it.
We'll talk about it. It's actually meant to confuse me.
Yeah. It's working.
Okay, so the right-hand side of the equal is what gets dumped? So the value that gets dumped into wherever we're going to dump it. And the left-hand side is where it gets dumped into.
So when I said accumulator equals not B, the not B gets dumped in the accumulator. All right, let's say 330. Okay, 5 per second. Okay, I'm stopping. Yeah. This is what I don't want to see. I want to see it, you know, and talk about it, but it's not really, like, random, you know? Like, when people totally don't get it, it's totally, you know, 25%, 25%, no, 20%. What's that?
B and C.
Yeah, B and C. You don't think any of the answers are right? Wow. Okay.
Let's see.
I think
the answer is A.
Well, yeah, sure. I would love to go through it. I'm trying to think of a way where everybody can see. I'm gonna try to use a text file. Let's try here. Okay, and I'm going to set my font. Can everybody see that? Yeah? No? Okay, so what do we have? Can somebody tell me what the instructions were? Accumulator equals
B.
Okay. Solve these problems, I just write down all the variables that change. So all the variables that are on the left-hand side of the equals. So what do we have? We have the accumulator and these three, and we have B and we have A. And so what happens after the first instruction? B is going to be in the accumulator. Okay? Good. Then you have accumulator equals accumulator and C. So what happens after that instruction? B and C is going to be in the accumulator. Okay, what about the next one? Okay, so not
B and C.
Not B and C is going to be in B, right? And then accumulator equals accumulator or B. Accumulator equals accumulator or B. And then A equals accumulator. So B or... Was this none of the answers? Sorry. I don't know. Yeah, I think I meant to put D in. B or... Yeah, all right. So everybody will get credit for this one. And my deepest apologies. Okay, so this is, did people get this? How many people got this answer? Oh, great. Okay, good. I feel better. All right.
So D just doesn't matter?
D doesn't matter in this case. Yeah.
I told you when it wasn't.
I'm sorry?
Because D said not accumulator. Is that, like, valid? So it was supposed to be useless information.
Yeah, this is useless information in this case. So we would never write a program like this, basically. Like, we would
not... No, I'm just saying for that question that you just
said. For that question, yeah.
The fourth step, or third step, was D equals not accumulated.
Yes, exactly.
Was that information valid in finding the right answer?
It was not valid, I'm finding the answer. I think what I was thinking when I made the question was to use the somewhere, maybe here or something. Yeah, anyway, I messed up and I apologize and I'll, I'll move on now and pretend that nothing happened. All
right. I have a question.
Yeah.
If this were to be a homework question, like, would it be, would we get credit, like, would it be right for us to write B and C or B? Like, could we change the order?
B and C, or B or B and C?
Like, you wrote B or B and C, but what if I wrote B and C or B?
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine too.
Yeah. I usually always put parentheses when I'm done with an operation, because if this was an or here, and this was an and, it would matter that I do the or. I compute the or first and the and. But yeah. So I always, whenever I go over one of the instructions, I just put parentheses real quick around it, and then I use it with parentheses later. Okay? Any other questions? There will be homework questions. And I think this is one of the problems that's going to be on the exam. Or might be on the exam.
As long as the right answer is there.
Well, you know what? When you grade, like, it's not multiple choice. So when you grade, you kind of give your own answers, and then you see that five people, like, your answer is wrong. Like, you realize it at some point. So it's kind of better that way. And, you know, you have TAs, and you have some kind of accountability. It's not just you with your crazy math that you mess up all the time. Okay. So that's not what I want. Okay. So, again, so this is another really long and complicated operation, and I should show this slide to show you how to break this into smaller steps, and also explaining what each step does. So this is for your reference to, if you, for example, if you want to try it out and do it and get stuck, this is sort of a check for you. Sanity check for you guys. I don't think it's, the expressions are going to get that complicated, but just in case, yeah. Okay, so this is again, we talked about variables before, and the memory of the computer is basically a huge, like a file cabinet with drawers where, each drawer is numbered, and there's some information in the drawer. So if your chairs were numbered, I could say, chair number, row, second row, third column, what is your name? And you would tell me, whatever your name is. So the same thing works with a computer. You have the memory is just a huge collection of variables. And one location in memory, one variable, can only store one value at one time. So remember, when we did the accumulator equals not B, and then we said accumulator equals accumulator and C, it's not like we put two values in there. Only one value can be in one variable at a time. Only one person can be one chair at one moment in time. And so what if we had 100 numbers, and we wanted to store all of them? And you've seen that in the Scratch programs that we did, we named the variables different things. And we can name them, apple, asparagus, artichoke, apricot, banana, and so on. 100, come up with 100 fruits and vegetables. But that would be tedious, right? It would take us half an hour just to come up with the names. And then we can say, okay, set apple to 4, set blueberry to 21, and then say apple plus blueberry for 2 seconds, okay? But we want to have a more efficient way of dealing with that. And the way we do it is we come up with a list of variables, okay? We say we have 100 variables. This doesn't show 100, but this is all a list of variables. And we could call them A, B, C, D, and so on. Or we just treat them all like one variable. Like one, it's not a simple variable, it's a more complex variable, but there's a really easy way to treat all these numbers together and deal with all these numbers. So we're going to call, we need a name for this variable. We're going to call it list. And we're going to have the first element in the list, the second element in the list, the third element in the list, each element in the list being a variable. So
you know, you have the first element L, the fifth element L, and we could call them A, B, C, D, E, but we are actually going to call them item 1 of L, item 5 of L, and so on. And notice that if you have 100 variables, you don't have to come up with names. You don't have to come up with numbers. You can just say item 1, item 100, item 1,000,000. Numbers are much easier to deal with. So, but we do keep all these numbers together in this list. But this is how we're going to use these numbers. And we can say stuff like item 1 of L equals 5. Like we treat items in the list as variables, okay? So we deal with them the same way as we deal with variables. So you can say stuff like this, and then what will happen is that 5 will get dumped in the first element in the list. We can say stuff like item 7 of L equals item 1 of L plus 4. And so what's going to happen in this case? Okay, so now I get some, and I guess at some point I realize that it would be helpful to put numbers here. So in the seventh item, we're going to put a 9 in there. Okay. And so in Scratch, we can actually make lists. And we can say, this is what our list is going to look like if you make a list. And, you know, this is not enough space because there's 100 numbers, but you can scroll down if you want and see what they are. So we can say replace, these are the commands that we are using. Replace item 1 of, so our list here is called var. So that's the name of the list, which is here. And we say replace the item 1 with 4. And then 4 gets written in here. And then we can say stuff like replace item 6 of var with 21. And then what will happen is that item 6 will get replaced with 21. And then we can say item 1 of var plus item 6 of var for 2 seconds. What's going to happen after this? What is the cat going to say? 25. Yeah. Okay. And so we can do all kinds of weird. So we can have a variable now that is the location, like the item number in the list. So we, instead of saying item 1, replace item 1 of var with 4, we can say set I to 1 and replace item I of var with 4. So because we set I to 1, this is going to replace item 1 of var with 4. Okay? And then we can change I by 5, and then we're going to say replace item I of var with 21. Does this make sense? So if we change I by 5, what is I going to be? 6. And when we say replace item I of var with 21, what is that going to do? 6, replace item 6 of var with 21. It's going to put 21 in the 6th element in the list. And then we can do all kinds of crazy stuff like item I over 5, because I is just a variable. We can say stuff like go to the item in the list that is I over 5, and so this is a little crazy. This is probably not going to happen too often. Okay, so then what the memory does is, say this, we had a memory of 2 with 4 variables. And we have this, these bits choose which variables we're going to access. Okay, so say we wanted to write something in the memory. And we have memory A, memory B, memory C, memory D, 4 locations of memory. This is a 2-bit number. How many numbers can we write with that, with 2 bits? How many different numbers can we represent? 4 different numbers, right? 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. And so this number selects which memory location we're going to use. So if this is 0, 0, we're going to choose A. If this is 0, 1, we're going to choose B, and so on. And then we have some kind of input that comes on this line and gets written in whichever memory we chose. So it's a very simple, this is how the computer works. This is how your computer works. When, obviously it's not just for memory locations, it's much more, but there's always this the circuit that selects, okay, what memory location do you want, and selects a certain memory location according to its address, so-called. And so this is a little more complicated. It's a 30-bit, I think I'll just skip. I think that's it. Oh, no, that's not it. I think I'm going to stop here, and we're going to continue next time. Did your problem get solved? You should check
it.
Your.
I checked it. Oh, and it
I think you figured it out at some point. Yeah.
I had a quick question about that clicker question with the last simulator question.
Yeah, yeah.
With the not D. I was just wondering why that wasn't relevant.
Because we don't use, we never use it for A. So the question was, what is A a function of? Let me pull it up.
Right. Because they go to different pockets that have the one zero. Well, I'm trying to think of the example that you gave with the marbles.
Yeah.
I've been thinking that, but I was wondering, like, how that informed 1-0 also.
I see.
Yeah, well, that was part of how did the big spread. Like, you could say, okay, a 1 gets spread by maybe going into the hole, the 1 hole. Like, hey, so you have 2 holes, so you have, like,
yeah, the 1 and 0.
The 1 and 0. And, like, I guess if you want to, whatever, you, like, hit the ball so that it goes into this hole.
Right, and so that's how it encodes 1 and 0, right?
Right.
It just goes into this hole.
Yeah, for example. And then,
right.
How do you build it on? Okay, so
it doesn't have to be like interfering with it. So like, if once it's true, then it has to stop.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Idea.
So can I do that?
Yeah, definitely. You can have like some
like
kind of
pulling in the way.
Yeah.
Okay, and then an orgy. How do you?
Okay,
that?
So you need two things to come into. So if this goes to true, then this goes to false.
Right.
Somehow. Maybe there could be like another. It has to go this way, so maybe they give me another ball here. You know, like when they touch. Now we're getting into physics, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you know how like they have like perfect, like, well, not perfect, but when you hit a ball, like when two balls hit, like if you have 3 balls and one hits this way, this stays still, and this like the movement gets propagated.
Okay.
And so if you have this ball here, this is gonna prevent. So when you hit it like this, it's probably gonna try to go like this. But that's not good. So you need something to stop it from going. Like, no, this is it. This is like this. Yeah, I'm doing that. Anyway, so what happens in this case? So this movement,
so one of these would be true and then one of these would be false.
Right.
Right? And then they would both have to go to the true, the one.
Yeah, exactly. So you want it, whenever there's a true and a false, you want it to go to true.
Right.
So then you need something that would, maybe this is something that doesn't move. It's something that doesn't move, so these two come in, but it only, you know.
But only this ball fits like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe you can also put them in to block it there, be like a stick or something. But the ball doesn't even hit the ball. Would that be possible?
Yeah, absolutely, sure. I mean, anything you want to do. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's perfect. And then you have to think of like what happens when it's 0-0. If two balls hit it the same way, I guess. And under the same angle. I guess your 1s and 0s are angles.
Yeah,
that's fine. It's not a big deal, you know?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I checked my clicker grades. Is it out of 10 for each class?
For each class,
it's out of
10.
Right, yeah, all of them were up to
Yeah, I thought.
And I just had one more question about this.
Yeah, definitely, please.
Can you explain, like,
absolutely.
Right, for these two, if the problem was like this, so this would be the final answer with both of these, A and D. Like, is that how you would write the final answer?
The question
answer?
Is usually what is going to be an A.
Okay, so we don't have to write this bottom part at all then.
We don't have to write the bottom part at all, but it depends on what the question is. The question is what's the accumulator A and B?
Can you explain what the answer would be if it was this?
Yeah, let's try to do it. Why don't you do it?
Okay.
So let's write it again, the whole thing.
Okay.
So you have accumulator equals B.
Yeah.
And then accumulator equals accumulator C and C. Okay.
And then D equals not accumulator.
Okay.
And then accumulator equals accumulator A, accumulator or D, right? Would make it?
Or D, okay. Sure.
And A equals accumulator.
Okay. So what do you do?
Okay, so first accumulator would be, B, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it says accumulator and C, so you would and C, right?
Yeah.
And then for D equals not accumulator, so would you put parentheses around this and write not in front of it?
Sure, but you have to write B.
You're B first, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And then for accumulator equals accumulator or D, that's the only part I'm confused about. So or D would be, you'd write, you'd go back up here, right?
Yeah, just put parentheses around these.
Around this,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you would include the not, right, though, in front of this? Or?
So you're saying accumulator equals accumulator or D. So accumulator or.
Or.
And just copy this.
Oh, okay. So,
right?
Okay. So then this whole thing would be copied.
Mm-hmm.
Over here. and then A equals accumulator, which A would equal all of this?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. For, I just got confused because for this accumulator, I didn't know if we went back to this or if we went back to this.
It's the last right value.
So the last value of the accumulator is what you go back to.
Exactly.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. And the homework is due this Monday, right?
It's due this Monday.
Can I email you if I have any questions?
Sure, absolutely. Please
all right.
Do. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Success.